Van Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Just turning 621, Michael Cohen here with producer Emily Scarlett. Hey, send us an email, give us some feedback. Our email address, capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. Okay, a new study from Good Jobs First, it's a progressive Washington, D.C.-based organization, that finds that the vast majority of tax credits given to companies in Michigan and other states result in very little in return, something that may very well support Governor Snyder's assertion that the removal of many of our state tax incentives is a good thing. To talk about exactly what the study found, I'm joined by Philip Matera, the research director for Good Jobs First and the main author of the report. Philip, welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you.
So just how much in tax incentives are provided to corporations by states, and what do states end up getting in return?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly how much, but the best estimate is that about $70 billion a year is spent by states and localities on various kinds of economic development subsidies, and the biggest portion of that is in some kind of corporate income tax credit or property tax abatement.
I guess my question is, Phil, but what choices do states really have? Doesn't it work in this way that if you don't give the tax credit, company will just go to the state next door?
Well, that's not always the case. I mean, with big projects, companies usually decide ahead of time where they want to be for reasons that often have nothing to do with taxes or subsidies or incentives. You know, they may just need to be in a particular location because of infrastructure or access to markets or access to skilled labor. And often cities and states end up giving away too much in subsidies to companies that have already decided where they want to make their next investment.
So what is driving these incentives then if it's not to ensure that these companies do invest in a particular state?
Well, a lot of public officials have been made to think that they have to play this game and offer these subsidies to compete against other localities, you know, or other states. I mean, the best thing would be to get rid of these things, you know, across the board, you know, throughout the country, and let, you know, companies will make their decisions based on, you know, other factors. But the problem is if one place gives it up and another place doesn't, they may feel that they're going to end up with a competitive disadvantage.
Now, aren't the incentives, though, usually tied to job growth predictions or estimates, and aren't companies usually required to do something in return for the incentive?
Well, it depends, and that was what our study was about. We looked at the largest subsidy programs in all of the 50 states to see to what extent do they have some real strings attached, and are those strings related to job creation? And we found that, you know, quite a bit, quite a few of these programs don't have specific requirements, you know, relating to jobs, which we think is a big mistake. You know, they may require the company to invest a certain amount of money, or in the case of things like film tax credits, to, you know, spend a certain amount of money on their film project. But we feel that, you know, all of this spending, all of these instances in which taxpayer money is going to a private party, should result in job creation and in the creation of quality jobs. That's why we also rate these programs in the states on whether they have wage and benefit requirements in these programs.
I'm talking to Philip Matera. He's the research director for Good Jobs First and the main author of a report on tax incentives and the result that it brings to states. So in terms of what happens in most cases, I know in Michigan we have had incentives that are tied to job creation, yet jobs haven't shown up from that. Are there typically requirements or any penalties if the company doesn't end up creating what it said it would?
Well, we're actually doing a follow-up report, which will be out next month, in which we look at the enforcement of these standards through things like what are called clawbacks, where states or localities try to get some of the money back if a company doesn't deliver in terms of job creation. But in you know, in this report we just put out, we looked at the standards themselves, you know, whether there are any requirements built in for job creation and for quality job creation.
So when it comes to the changes that were made here in Michigan, our governor did get rid of the Michigan business tax, which was considered very unfair. He also removed many of our tax incentives, but he in turn basically allowed for this very big and controversial tax break for businesses. Are you saying that that is ultimately the right way to go?
No, we're not supporting that. I mean, you know, Michigan was a difficult state for us to include in the study because, you know, you are in transition. And we included a lot of the large tax credit programs in our sample because they're still technically in place and they will be costing the state money for some time to come. And because, you know, it's not clear yet what's replacing them. I mean, we don't generally think that tax cuts of any kind are the answer to all economic ills. but what our focus is in this study is on whether subsidies and, you know, economic development incentives are effective in job creation. And what we found was that a lot of these programs, including the ones in Michigan, such as especially the film tax credit and the credits for advanced battery producers and Renaissance zones, are not effective in creating jobs because they're not structured in a way that really so that these programs have strict job creation requirements.
Now, when you talk about leveling the playing field and removing this whole incentive program across the board, was that even possible? I mean, each state has its own system, I guess. I mean, how would you get the entire country or all the states to agree on that?
Well, ideally, it would be done in Congress because, most of these companies are operating across state lines, and Congress theoretically would have the power to regulate this, and it really doesn't do the country a lot of good to have localities competing against one another, you know, to offer these big subsidy deals to companies, because in the end they end up sometimes crippling themselves because they've given away so much in revenues that they can't provide the public services that are needed. And there have been cases where companies have gotten these big deals, and then a few years down the line, they complain about the poor quality of public services.
Well,
but they themselves are, in a sense, to blame because they insisted on the big subsidy package.
Although with $70 billion in subsidies, there's no way that the companies are going to allow for that to happen without a major fight.
Well, yeah. I mean, if companies can get these tax breaks, they will take them. So it's up to public officials to try to figure out some way to kind of end this self-destructive process.
Philip Matera, Research Director for Good Jobs First. He's the main author of the report on this issue of tax subsidies and how little states get in return. Philip, thank you very much for joining me.
Happy to do it.
And we will be right back to talk about the upcoming pension tax, which is about to kick in just a few days, and what might happen in 2012 to change that. That is next. I'm Michael Cohen. And you are listening to More Compelling Talk Radio 1320 WILS.